This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Welcome to Hey YA, a book riot podcast covering young adult literature, from great new books to favorite classic reads, from new stories to the latest in on-screen adaptations. Hey YA is here to elevate the exciting world of young adult lit. I'm your host, Erica Ezzafetti, and I'm joined today by the marvelous, the miraculous, the amazing managing editor, Vanessa Diaz.
What an intro. I'm great. Thank you. How are you?
It was on my spirit. And I was just like, you know what? Let me put this on her real quick. We're recording on April 5th. There's an earthquake. Spring is like not springing in the way that I'm used to. But other than that, I'm good. Like, how are things in your neck of the woods?
My father decided this was the precise moment in which he should roll the trash cans in from the curb. So I apologize if you hear some noise that I'm trying to mute myself out. Great, great. That is my version of an earthquake. No, California is California-ing. It's actually been really weird and rainy this entire time that I've been here. I have this inability to pack accurately for trips to California. Whenever I bring like warm weather clothes, it's rainy. Whenever I pack like stuff for cold weather, it's 85 degrees. So I know that is the most first world problem because it's quite nice right now. It's like going to be in the, I think, high 60s today, but you know.
It does seem like the weather's being a little shady towards you. So I acknowledge that. I acknowledge your frustration with that.
Well, and it's been snowing for a bunch of, like, I just did a podcast. For those who don't know, I co-host All the Books once every several weeks with Liberty Hardy. And she just told me that, like, they just came off of, like, several inches of slush. Like, they were supposed to get 16 inches of snow. They got, like, rain and snow instead. I know Kelly, who is in Illinois, also has been dealing with snow. I'm like, what is, I mean, again, climate change, but also just weather be weathering.
Weather be weathering. Yes. For no reason. Just be doing what I want to do.
What I want to do. But anyway, I'm so excited to be filling in on the show again. You're going to get me for a couple more at least, but we are working on some other stuff in the back. But in the meantime, it's been so fun to get to come on and talk about YA stuff with you.
It has been actually very fun, so I have no complaints. Whenever the new thing comes, that'll be fun, but I'm having fun now. So, yes. All right, so we do have a little bit of news before we get into the main meat of this episode, which is a book club buddy read discussion of, Divine Rivals by Rebecca Ross. So, yes, there is a trailer that I will link in the show notes. It's a new trailer for Turtles All the Way Down adaptation, and that is based on the John Green novel. I was about to be like, what did I read by John Green? I read John Green closer to when I was like actually kind of like on the edge of YA myself, like you know, being like intended audiences. Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's been a minute. I read The Fault in Our Stars.
Same.
And yes, I've been told that, so we discuss astrology things sometimes, and like I think the general consensus for both of us is like I kind of believe it and I kind of don't. It's kind of like fun, whatever. I was told by a fire sign, they mocked me for it, that I like cry very easily for like movies and books and stuff, and they're like, well, you're a Cancer, and I was like, you don't cry, because they were like, well, you cry, you probably cry at movies, right? And I was like, yeah, and you don't.
It's
like
true.
What like what? Mm-hmm. So saying all that to say that I was living in New York City at the time that I was reading The Fault in Our Stars by John Green, and it had me crying in the club. By the club, I didn't go to clubs really because I'm a homebody. It had me crying on the subway.
I can't remember how old I was when I also have only of John Green, I think, have only read The Fault in Our Stars, and in spite of being characterized as the Scorpioist of Scorpios in many ways, I absolutely will like bawl at not only a movie but like a good piece of music or like a dance performance. I don't know, art gets me. But this, that movie and book, I was just sobbing. And like, corny as it is, I still to this day actually really think that the quote in that book about how you how you fall in love is accurate. Like, the quote is that you fall in love the way you fall asleep, which is like slowly and then all of a sudden all at once. And I was like, you know, I really like that analogy. You know, I thought it was nice.
Let's let him cook a little bit. Let's let him marinate on that a little bit. Maybe it's not so bad, guys. Maybe it's okay. I did not see the movie. I think by the time the movie came out, I had forgotten about the book. I was just, but the book and I had a moment.
Indeed.
And it was on the subway.
So yeah, I actually haven't read Turtles all the way down. I remember I was working at a bookstore like when it came out, I believe anyway. I definitely remember like seeing stacks and stacks of this book in my hands at one point. So I must have been working at the store when it came out. But it's, I haven't actually read this one. I know what a little bit of what's about. It's a young girl who has OCD, like actual clinical OCD and not in the like very casual and flippant way that people
Tumblr OCD
use it nowadays. Yeah.
Yeah.
And just, what it's like to kind of live in her head. And she's dealing, I think, with the, I want to say there's like a mystery at the core of it too, that she's trying to figure out what happened to like a missing billionaire. I want to say that's correct.
Like you do.
Right?
Yes.
So
as one does.
Yes. Yeah. The trailer actually looks really good. Like I really appreciate the casting in it. The person who's cast as her best friend, whose name, of course, I am blanking on right now. But was in this show called Mr. Iglesias that was like short-lived on Netflix for a while, but really great character. I don't know, it looks interesting. Like, I would totally watch this.
It does, even like without being a John Green fan. I wouldn't say I'm a fan. Well, he's cool, you know.
Yeah, I just like haven't read a ton of him. It's not like an active dislike or anything.
Yeah. I would watch it without like being a fan of the book or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it looks interesting. So it looks like a good adaptation. So that's fun.
Can call out a few of the stars. I just finally look up their names. So this one, the screenplay was written by Elizabeth Berger and Isaac Apteker, and it stars Isabella Merced as Asa Holmes and Cree. I apologize. I did not look up how to pronounce this name, but it's either Sacchino or Sacchino, maybe, as her best friend Daisy Ramirez, Felix Mallard as love interest Davis Pickett. So yeah, you can go watch that trailer up. We'll put that link in the show notes. And hope may their efforts succeed.
It's on HBO. Cool. I was just like, where is it? HBO Max. Cool. So we're going to get to the rest of the show after we hear from our sponsor. Today's episode is brought to you by Thirsty by Jazz Hammonds. College student Blake and her girlfriend have one goal: join the exclusive sorority that promises connections to a network of trailblazing women of color. Now, Ella's acceptance is a sure thing. She's a daughter of a Serena Society alum, after all. Blake, on the other hand, lacks Ella's pedigree and her confidence. Luckily, though really unluckily, she finds courage at the bottom of a liquor bottle. When she drinks, she's bold and funny, and as pledging intensifies, so does Blake's drinking. Ella assures her that she's fine, partying hard is what it takes, but with her future on the line, Blake must decide how far she's willing to go to achieve glittering dreams of success. Now, just so you know, Jazz Hammonds is the 2023 winner of the Critics Scott King John Steptoe Award for New Talent for We Deserve Monuments, and We Deserve Monuments was an Amazon Best Books of the Year and Barnes & Noble Best Books of the Year for 2023, so suffice to say, y'all should check this new one out. Thanks again to Thirsty by Jazz Hammonds for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Flatiron Books, publisher of 888 Love and the Divine Burden of Numbers by Abraham Chang. So this is an interesting love story. It's great for fans of Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow and High Fidelity. It's set in the mid-90s at NYU. And it follows young Wang, who has gotten the advice of love through Chinese numerology from his uncle. So he believes that he will have 7 great loves in his life. And then he meets Irena in 95. And she's like the best. She's brilliant, charismatic, quick-witted, funny. They fall in love. But the thing is, she's number 6. So if he is to have 7 great loves, does that mean his time with Irena is going to come to an end? So this is a love letter to Western pop culture, Eastern traditions, and being a first-generation New Yorker. Make sure to check it out. And thanks again to Flatiron Books, publisher of 888 Love and the Divine Burden of Numbers by Abraham Chang, for sponsoring this episode. Also, real quick, just to let y'all know, if you're looking to elevate your reading life, we have this thing called Tailored Book Recommendations, and it's here to help you with handpicked recommendations. You can tell the bibliologist at Tailored Book Recommendations about what you love and what you don't. You can get your recommendations via email or receive hardcovers or paperbacks in the mail. It's like little gifts. Like, I love book subscriptions.
We're calling them that from now on.
They're called book subscriptions. I love books.
Otherwise known as subscriptions. We're keeping it in. We're keeping it in.
You may know them. You may know them as subscriptions, but around these parts.
Around these
they're
parts.
They're subscriptions. Okay. I love my subscriptions, my book subscriptions, because they feel like getting treats in the mail. Like, you know, if you know, you know. And I know that it feels good. So we have different plans. There's a quarterly or annual plan available. TBR also has something for every budget. Plans start at $18. You can visit mytbr.co to subscribe today. It only takes a few minutes. Again, that's mytbr.co. You can also gift it. Go ahead and give somebody a subscription, okay? Make them feel good. Do it right now. I would feel good about it. But yeah.
Wait, come back. So,
okay. Great. You're sometimes on,
We didn't promise we would not be unhinged. That was never established.
We never made that promise. So, we are real. Like, we never said we were all put together. Okay. I can't be held accountable. So, yes.
Book
Divine
Club.
Rivals. Yes.
So I want to ask you a few questions actually about it before we dive in.
Please.
So we're going to tell y'all a little bit about it, et cetera, before we dive in, et cetera. We're definitely going to go into spoiler territory, but I wanted to ask what your relationship was with this book, in the sense that when I found out we were going to do book club, it's because I had, you know, jumped on the podcast and we were kind of going over what the next several episodes were. I admit that I had seen this cover, I believe, come across like my TikTok page at some point, but I did not know anything about it, hadn't heard the discourse. I literally had no clue what this book was about when I started reading. So were you like familiar with it since you all had discussed it a little bit before, or were you coming off at this kind of not in the know as well?
I, as like the response to you, I remember this long-winded answer. It was a meme. This lady got arrested and she said, she was in the back of the cop car. She was like, "Burly?" That came into my mind. I don't know if you remember that.
I do.
But my answer is barely. P.O.P. Hold it down. Anyway, barely.
Okay.
And Tirza had recommended it because we would kind of take turns doing the book club choices.
Sure.
And we wanted a fantasy or romanticy, whatever. And this was popular on TikTok. She saw it. She was like, "Oh, popular on TikTok." And we try to do like a mix of new things with things that are maybe popular, but not too, you know, that sort of thing. So she recommended it and I was like, "All right, sounds good. Let's get it." And so I didn't have a.
Yeah, I think it was interesting to come at this book from that perspective. Yeah. I mean, in general, like I kind of switch up how I approach books. Sometimes I do like to know a little bit about them before I go in. And sometimes you just can't avoid knowing because a book is so buzzy that, you know, it sort of makes its way into your consciousness. I was kind of surprised at how little I knew about this one. And so I just kind of went in and I wonder if some of that maybe affected how I like ultimately felt about the book, which is not spoiler. Like, I don't feel it was a bad book or anything, but I think just based on the cover and like some of the framing, I was a little bit expecting it to like delve much deeper into fantasy than this actually does. So why don't you maybe tell the people, or I can, whichever, a little bit about what the book is about?
Yeah. So I don't remember if it told us the exact time frame or era, year, but I was getting like early 1900 vibes, like alternate history type of thing.
Yeah. It's definitely inspired by World War One.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. I saw that too. And I was like, I didn't see any confirmation, but it's alternate World War II. It follows Iris. She's like 18 or so. And when we meet her, she's basically saying bye to her older brother, Forrest, who has signed up to go fight this war on behalf of a goddess named Enva. So there's your little fantasy right there. So they're saying their painful goodbyes, and she's like, you know, "Don't leave me, don't leave me and mom." And he's like, "Nah, I gotta go. But promise me you'll stay in school, finish high school, And then, you know, I'm going to come back. Everything's going to be good. So he leaves. She doesn't hear anything from him for a hot minute, like for a long time. And she ends up having to quit high school. Her mother goes into this like deep depression and starts suffering from alcoholism. And she takes a job at this paper. It's actually a pretty decent paper. And she's trying to get this columnist role, which would be a promotion for her, which would result obviously in more money because things are rough at home. They're eating beans and stuff out of cans. Nothing wrong with some. I just had some beans, but it's like, you know, they over here.
That's lovely.
You know what I mean? It's World War One rations. You know, it's like, oh, I didn't have money for a sandwich, so I had to eat.
True, it's slim pickings.
A tin
for
of
sure.
beans, mm-hmm. a slim picking of beans. So it's rough. And then she has this rival at work, this hotshot who comes from a nice family, and she's like, oh, well, he's probably gonna get the promotion because he's, you know, his dad'll pay to you know, get a bribe and all that extra stuff. Mm-hmm. So. His name is Roman. His first name. She calls him Kit. That's his last name. They call each other by their last names. So Roman slash Kit, whatever. He is, you know, he's kind of sour, kind of like brusque, cold towards her. And they're, you know, both vying for this same promotion. And so that's like the basis of it. The very, very general piece of it.
So like the piece that I will add there, if that's cool, yeah, is basically that so like all this is happening, and so of course, like Erica just said, Iris and Roman are like vying for this position at the newspaper, and then tragedy strikes again. We said spoilers, so I'm just gonna go ahead and get into it that unfortunately right. Iris's mother passes away she in like an accident and it happens like in the middle of the workday. And Iris basically, you know, leaves kind of in a fog and has to go identify her mother's body and then comes home and decides to go home and like, well, actually, let's back up the train because she starts doing this before. One of the ways that Iris copes with the fact that her brother has been gone for so long without hearing from him is that she writes him letters on her typewriter that she never sends him, right? She just basically writes them as a way to like vent her frustrations with the fact like I'm mad that he left. I am mad that he's gone. I love him more than life itself. Like I miss him, like all the things. She writes to him and puts these letters in her wardrobe because again, she doesn't actually send them. They're just for her. And she discovers that they like are disappearing. And she's like, that's weird. And after this the tragedy I just mentioned with like her mom and she's home, she realizes that somebody has started writing back. And she's like, wait, what's happened? What's going on? And we know, though she doesn't, that the person writing back is actually Roman. He also has a typewriter that is like
dun, 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 dun.
Kind of magically linked to hers. And he's writing back, but he is not telling her who he is. And it starts off a little bit like, I wouldn't call it nefarious so much as he's just like, oh, yeah. Like, da, 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 da. And then it's one of those where like, I should have told her. I still haven't told her. Oh my gosh, it's too late. Now what do I do? And so he just doesn't tell her, and he instead tells her that he is someone named Carver. And lo and behold, of course, like Iris and this Carver person start to like develop this relationship through these letters. Like that's of course very friendly, and then maybe like a little something more. But again, we know who the letters are coming from. She does not. And in person, he is ostensibly still like the same old Roman. And then starts to soften a little, and she kind of has no idea why. So that is like
the
brief basis of.
That is, yes. The letter part is important.
I figured we should let people know because that is, this is where the fantasy thing kicks in.
The letter like, portion.
There's a boy, and there's a girl, and there's beans. The end.
But is that that far from it's missing not. Is the letters and then that right? Yeah. Like, back me up. Like, okay, the letter part is important. I guess I was setting like the backdrop, the foundation.
You
and
did
that
good.
Is like the meat. Thank you. I appreciate it.
We got there together. It is great.
We got there in the end. We're all on our own journeys to quote
I've just Chloe. Figured before we built on anything else, it was going to be pretty crucial to be like, by the way, because that is really
That's the whole
and also, like, the whole point of calling this, like, fantasy, which, and there's some, I think, disagreement maybe here. I know. I actually remember reading about this book now that you've brought it to my attention when Tirza recommended it for one of our newsletters called Read This Book, and she got into the fact that, like, some people would probably call this low fantasy because there's not, like, again, a heck maybe a lot of, like, fantasy in the way that you might be thinking. Yeah. There's definitely, like, the War of the Gods, but the war itself feels very real and lived in. And it's clear, and this I do know from interviews with the author, that, like, she did a lot of research on, like trench warfare, like the way war was fought, you know, in World War One. So the book does sort of feel like it was, you know, set maybe in, like, an England circa World War One. The audiobook is definitely narrated by people with English accents. And then, And there is this element of the magic typewriters, but really besides that, the rest of it is very kind of rooted in reality. Like, there's again, other than, like, the mythological gods and goddesses, who I personally don't feel like play that giant a role. Like, they're referenced, and this whole war is about that in theory, which the more I sit with it could be, like, a really interesting meditation on, like, why wars are fought and how, like, religion has fueled so many of them throughout history.
That's what I thought. That's what I was going to say. Yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly, I was going to say, like, I kind of feel like, going into it, seeing the title of the book, again, Tirza kind of chose, but we, you know, we would always make democratic decisions on what we were going to read for book club, and we would kind of take turns, and I was like, all right, that sounds good. And I think she hadn't, like, finished reading it yet. She pitched it to me. She's like, oh, it's, like, mythology based. So I'm thinking, like, oh, it's mythology based. It's called Divine Rivals. It has a fantasy sticker on the library copy that I have. And I'm like, okay. So I'm going in thinking, and I saw Whispers of Hades and Persephone comparisons, la, la, la. So I go in thinking, like, it's going to be something, as you're saying, more fantastical. Yeah. And then I'm like, okay, the fantasy, the real, like, hard-hitting fantasy, which would be the gods and goddesses portion, that feels removed. It feels kind of distant. And then I'm like, as I'm reading, I feel like, I mean, that's like war. Like, these people are fighting in the name of Inva. Others, the other side is fighting in the name of Dacre. And I feel like the everyday people who are actually doing the fighting and actually doing all of the suffering are so far removed from the reasons that they're fighting. And I'm like, that's just like regular war, whether it's for religion or whether it's for countries. Because a lot of times the people, not a lot of times, every single time, the people who are commanding other people to die are so far removed from the front lines, from the trenches, from the rats scuttling over and biting at your feet and nibbling on your food in the trenches and the moisture and the all these terrible things. So it's like, I do see that as an effective metaphor for that.
Yeah. And, like, part of the thing that we, you know, the reason we talk about war is because at one point Iris just decides when the position, like the actual position that the newspaper is indeed given to Roman, she, due to the combination of, I think, grief and just sort of coming to a realization of, like, what, like, life is for her these days, decides to up and go and instead write for another publication on the front lines of this conflict. And Roman ends up following her there. And so we get to see them trying to cover from, like, a journalistic perspective, this war that's going on that is, again, very much being fought, like, physically in, like, the trench warfare style. And they come into, you know, peril at a couple different times. But the Hades Persephone angle, to go back to that, is basically in, like, the gods themselves, because it is said that a long time ago, essentially what went down with the two gods, with, oh my gosh, Dacre and, I'm about to mispronounce Inva. The other one. Enva, I think he was going to call her Elva. is that Dacre wanted Elva, like, came up from, like, an underworld type of thing, took Elva with him, very much in the way that Hades fell in love with Persephone, like, kidnapped her, took her down to the underworld. The difference, I mean, slightly, basically, is that Erva, oh my gosh, I'm not going to get this name right.
Enva, it's all Enva. Good.
Essentially, like, puts the people to sleep in order to escape. And that is why Dacre is, like, so upset, and how this, like, war, however many years later, has broken out. And the goal is to basically, like, annihilate all mortals, I believe. And, like, that, though, is kind of the most we interact with the gods. Like, there is, like, an explainer of how the, like, that, again, everything I basically just said And then you know at one point, like you hear the names tossed, oh, and so-and-so is, you know, fighting for Enva and so is fighting for Dacre. But like, it's not by any means, it doesn't spend time, I guess, with that as much as it does with Roman and Iris. So like, if you did go into this expecting, and not that that is how the author built it, I don't believe that she did, as like a Hades Persephone retelling, remix, whatever, I would not call that. I think that it has like some inspiration from that in like the overall, you know, God system, but it is not like the focal point, at least not in this book. I don't know, because spoiler alert, there is a second book in this. It's a duology. So yeah, that part was just interesting to me as far as world building, because it felt not underdeveloped per se. It's just that if what you're expecting is to spend a lot of time in a world that is inspired by Hades and Persephone, I don't think that's what you're going to get.
It's not for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So it's kind of even more like fabulous in that way.
Kind of feels that way. Don't look at.
Yeah, I do. And I really like magic realism and fabulism. I feel like the world building, I mean, there's not much world to build. Like you said, there's not much fantasy in it, but I do like the little sprinklings of magic. It kind of crops up where you don't expect it. But people recognize that it comes from like the influence of the gods. Like if a god is buried somewhere or something like that, then your house might anticipate your needs and give you like spring, you know, conjure up a plate of warm cookies and milk or something if you're sad. So it's like little details. I was like, oh, that's cute. I like that. What else? I feel like. I don't know if it was because I like read it quickly within like a couple days. I did feel kind of disconnected from some of it. Okay,
let's talk about that, because I felt the same way.
I felt disconnected for some reason.
So like at first, because there is an epistolary structure to a good chunk of the novel, right? Because you're getting Iris writing these letters to who she thinks is her brother Forrest, and then she finds out that it's actually this Carver person. And so you're seeing them like write back and forth to one another in this like very friendly way that feels very You've Got Mail. And I will fully confess that like that is a movie that I watched and talked about on a podcast like within the last year, and like having watched it with 2024 eyes compared to like 1990 something eyes was like, this is some BS.
I've never seen it. Why is it BS?
It's mainly because of Tom Hanks's character. Like it's takes place in like fall in New York, and it's like, you know, there's so much that I, you know, fully confess to like having, I think, liked Once Upon a Time. But like in the fullness of time, you learn that like his character is basically somebody who works or is going to work for this like big box, very much feels like a Barnes and Noble and like an Amazon combined, and they are going to displace the tiny bookstore across the way that Meg Ryan's character like works at. But like she doesn't know that he's emailing her, so like that's where like the comparisons come in, is that she's exchanging this like lovely correspondence with somebody who she does not know is this guy, Joe Fox. And so she doesn't know that the person who is literally going to put her out of business, and not just like accidentally, actively like, no, I don't care about this tiny bookstore, to hell with you sort of thing, is also the person who is like, you know, she has this burgeoning friendship with, and she's kind of starting to have feelings. Like she doesn't know. So there's like kind of a, and some of the ways that he just treats her in that, I don't, won't go off too much. That's not what we're here to talk about. But so that structure was interesting to me, because I think it kind of colored the way I was looking at this, and also gave me some of those same vibes. I don't think Roman is a Joe Fox character. Like Roman is, although prickly in the beginning, definitely warms up to her, like I think pretty quickly. So to bring it back to like what you were just saying, I frankly was going to ask you if you had the same issues with the connection, because I listened to this on audio, and you know, this is neither here nor there, maybe, but like, you know, folks at Book Right Now, I had a really wild couple of weeks. I have a brand new baby niece, hey Mia. And ended up basically reading this book like relatively quickly. I say like, in like a two or 3 day span. And so just to be, you know, put the cards on the table, was listening to this audio at like double speed.
Same. Except I don't have a new niece. that's the one element.
Is it literally that, or did we quite literally, I thought we kind of quickly went from her being like, okay, letters, I love this Carver guy, and then he went, you know, Roman is basically, wait, it me, and she's like, ugh, we should get married. Like, I was a little taken aback.
Just a little aback. I'm like, Rebecca, I need you to take me a little affront because you have taken me a little aback. I need to go a little forward, please. Because no, yeah. And I'm just like the last few chapters. I'm like, what, baby, what is you doing?
Yeah,
it just to the whole book. I'm like, where is this plot going, ma'am? I was sitting here like by myself, and like you saw my notes. I said her mother. Like at the end, I was like, what? And I had to put the book down a couple times because some of it was like, okay, I'm kind of jumping around. I'm gonna say what you said first about. Like when I was thinking a few minutes ago of trying to summarize, give you the overview, it kind of felt like as I was speaking, and I feel like this is partially why I was like, oh yeah, the letter part, I left that out. It kind of felt like not much happened. And yeah, I think there was a disconnect like before they went to the front lines.
Yeah.
Like that's where it kind of it like picked up. But like it kind of felt like empty. It kind of like felt like there wasn't much that happened. And then they go to the front lines, like you said, and then she has a hard time reconciling the idea of Roman and the idea of Carver in her mind once she finds out that they're one and the same. And I'm just like, girl, what?
Girl, what?
What? And I had a little... There was one moment where she was like, I'm going to live my life with Roman and we going to be booed up. And that's that on that. But then when she gets stressed and pressed, when he was messed up in the hospital, she goes back to reading the letters from Carver. This is before she knows he's Carver. So I'm like, girl, didn't he just take a grenade for you? I would take a grenade for you. She was doing his best. What is his name? He's Filipino. Bruno Mars for her.
He was.
And she gonna go run into the typewriter of another man. into the closet of another man. Iris,
my friend.
Ma'am.
Yeah, that's don't the part I was trying to reconcile too. Like I couldn't. Like,
I know,
like,
we know who.
Indeed.
Yeah.
But she didn't. And then again, like, it's just the crux. So it's not that nothing happens per se, but I couldn't. And again, this is not shade. Like, I know that a lot of people really connected to this book, and that's great. This is just like an actual fluid discussion of like how we reacted to the book.
Yeah.
But we aren't really like attached to the mother when she passes away. It obviously, that's also maybe a metaphor though, how like life happens at you, right? Like you're just kind of going along doing your things and then tragedy doesn't announce itself. It just happens. And so I can understand like the abruptness of how that happens. But then it kind of just sort of feels like, you know, this job was in theory so important to her. And then obviously she's like not showing up as her best self because of everything that's going on. She's showing up late. She's not turning in pieces when she's supposed to. And so there's like, okay, another position has gone to Roman. And like, even that progression felt like a little bit quick where I was like, oh, like, okay, there's a tragedy. And like, now she's like given up and she's going to go to the front. And maybe that is just because that is what life felt like and what does feel like when you're dealing with this giant, big conflict. Where like 1 minute to the next, something changes for you and you realize that life is, you know, fragile and fleeting until you're like, no, I got to make a big change. Like, I don't fault the character or the author for making that choice.
Yeah.
But I already was having a bit of like, oh, we're moving along quickly. So then when we go back to this like Carver thing, it just sort of happened fast. And then as you know, I'm looking at some of our notes that we have each made independently here, but it sort of was like, okay, so we were together, a big thing happened, he took that grenade for me, and I have chosen this moment to go back and reread these letters and decide that like maybe there was too much, you know, I don't know, confiscation here for me to so it feels very much like kind of a forced third act breakup sort of thing.
I put that somewhere in my,
did you? Yeah. Oh yeah. I see it here. So and that was annoying. Just the part that I was like, okay. You know, and that happens when you are writing a romance, right? Like you have to like create, that's in theory, like one of the structures to it. Not always. I've definitely seen some people messing around with that and making it less of like a third act breakup so much as like a third act thing that gets in the way. I think I would have maybe appreciated that more if we had leaned in more to the fact that like he's injured and in this hospital and like maybe that for some reason is like the main conflict as to why they like can't carry out their happily ever after plans, but it sort of just felt like she's like, oh, you just took this grenade, like, I don't know these letters, like, do I ever even really know you? No, actually you don't. That is the whole like point
of yeah
life. But again, this is also a different time, and yeah, like that is how marriages often came together, so I don't know how much of this is me bringing like unnecessary modern bias to these characters.
Did you see my notes on that very thing you said? I said it's giving that insta love, but maybe that is realistic for a time when people will get married after a 5-cent pop and a box of crackers.
Yes. Nope. My grandmother got married by walking around a plaza. Like, oh, that's how she got engaged. Like, she's walking around a plaza, and then my grandfather was like, hello, would you like to take another walk around the plaza with me? And she was like, yes. And he was like, I will ask for your, like, literally, I wish I was exaggerating. That is how Adolfo and Maria Concepción Diaz ended up together. Like, so, yeah. Like,
would you like to take another walk around the plaza? Yes, we can hitch, girl.
That is sort of like the, like, that, it was like a whole ritual thing, like traditional thing. Like, oh, that was like a big deal. Yeah. So, like, yeah, different times, right? Oh, like, courting rituals were different. So, I don't want to, like, be too critical, I guess. But it did feel, I guess the pace of the book, I think maybe for some works, it's just the book both is kind of a slow reveal because it's not like what I would call action packed for most of the book, and then when the action does come, it's just like all the things like at once, and I was like, oh, okay, like it just took me a second.
That's what it is. Yeah. Now I have a question about the mom real quick to go back.
Yes.
After we hear from a sponsor. Today's episode is brought to you by Avid Reader Press. So this next book is a really fun sounding mashup of different genres. There's a little time travel, a little romance, a little spy thriller action going on. So in the near future, a civil servant is offered the salary of her dreams and is shortly afterward told what project she'll be working on. A recently established government ministry is gathering quote unquote expats from across history to establish whether time travel is feasible for the body, but also for the fabric of space-time. This is an exquisitely original and feverishly fun fusion of genres and ideas. The Ministry of Time by Colleen Bradley asks, what does it mean to defy history when history is living in your house? Colleen Bradley's answer is a blazing, unforgettable testament to what we owe each other in a changing world. It kind of gives Outlander meets Cloud Atlas, or if The Time Traveler's Wife was written by Sally Rooney or Colson Whitehead. Make sure to check out The Ministry of Time by Colleen Bradley. And thanks again to Avid Reader Press for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Song of the Silk's Realms by Judy I. Lin. Xu Wei is a talented young musician who was orphaned at a young age. Her sole family is a kindly uncle, but then her uncle is killed, and she is, of course, devastated. With no family and no patron, Xu Wei is facing the possibility of a lifetime of servitude playing the qin. Then one night, she is unexpectedly called to perform for the enigmatic Duke Meng. He surprises Xu Wei further with an irresistible offer. Serve as a musician in residence at his manor for 1 year, and he'll set her free of her indenture. But the Duke's motives become increasingly more sus when he and Xu Wei barely survive an attack by a nightmarish monster. It's like, what? What's going on here? So this book is a sweeping epic romantasy that follows a talented young musician who is swept away to the celestial realm by an enigmatic young duke. And who doesn't want to be swept away to the celestial realm by an enigmatic young duke? She's living all our dreams, honestly. Make sure to check out the new book. And thanks again to Song of the Six Realms by Judy I. Lin for sponsoring this episode. Okay, maybe this is just, we're jumping around, obviously. Maybe this is not a big deal. But like, according to my, as you see from my notes, the mother part gagged me a little bit. And I was just like, okay, her mother got hit by a car or something. And then that was that.
Yeah.
I guess we just move it on. And then she got cremated. Now she got her ashes on the front line with her. Like in her room, not like on the, in the Airbnb.
The Airbnb. Okay, there are B&Bs in this book, and I will confess that it kind of would like tickle my brain.
B&B.
I was like, "What the what?" Oh yeah, no, B&Bs are real. Like the B&Bs, yes, yes,
and yeah, those existed before Airbnbs. I have the millennial brain rot. I'm sorry. yes, the B&B that she's staring at with Marisol and Addie, her ashes are there. So I just wanted to be like, dang, that was very unceremonious. She didn't try to, like, and people process grief differently, so I don't want to seem like overly critical or whatever. And homegirl had a lot to deal with. Like I said, she was, you know, she had them, all she had to eat was those tin beans. Mm-hmm. They had candles. They, like, the electric bill was non-existent or something. Mm-hmm. They were just, she was just trying to make it. So there's a lot of stuff going on. And I don't want to be overly critical. I'll be like, well, she should have done this. And this only makes sense. You know, people handle grief differently. But
even still,
it's like, yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't trying to speak over you. What I was going to say is that what the book did instead, if I recall correctly, is that it basically implied that she did have a hard time of it, but it kind of just swept over it with like a couple of sentences that were like retroactive, where like we find out that, you know, the mother dies. And so she like, again, abruptly leaves work, has to go identify the body that day. Like the next day, Robin shows up at her place to be like, hey, you left. Like, what's up? And she's like, no reason. The only reason that he and the people she worked with find out what happened is that when she comes back to work in like that fog, she decides to write an obituary, because that's what she's doing at this agency like right now. Like she basically gets to write obituaries and like classifieds. So she writes an obituary about her mother. Roman sees it and is like, oh my gosh, your mom died, and like tells her about it. And we get to know in like a few sentences that she's like, yeah, I have basically, you know, had been slacking off at work. I'd been showing up late and I completely forgot my deadline. So like the implication for me is that there were maybe some days, weeks, et cetera, in between there where she was having like a really rough go of it and like grieving or not grieving by like just showing up to work and living life. But we didn't spend time in that space. We basically just got to know, like, yeah, I went through it, but here I am.
Yeah, and that might be why I felt the disconnect.
Exactly. Like, I just felt like I didn't get to connect with the characters in the way, because like that ultimately is a very tragic event that I would expect to like draw a little bit more on like the heartstrings. But because it kind of moved through, which, again, if I'm taking a step back, maybe is supposed to be like a bit of a meditation on how like that is how grief often feels, that it is just like a thing you are going through. And then one day, like, that fog is either lifted or at least, I don't know, like clear enough for you to like have a moment of, oh wow, I've been really going through it. But I didn't get to go through it with this character. It was just sort of like, and then we got there, and then boom, the action like changes. So I liked the characters. Like, I really liked the setup of her being this like plucky, you know, writer, and like deciding to go be a correspondent. Obviously, like people who report on conflict and war and stuff like this, like, that's a hard job because you are literally going to the front lines. At least they were in these days, even maybe more so than some now. So like, I, all of that is like, that's just an admirable character. Like, I like arrivals to lovers.
I love arrivals to lovers.
Me too. There's just a piece here that I was like, oh, okay. Like, and we're here.
I was going to ask you, how did you feel about the romance / chemistry of it all?
I think, again, if we had maybe either spent more time in the letter writing phase, or if there was a bigger tussle once she figured out who he was. And even then, I couldn't really, because Roman ended up very quickly like not being terrible to her, even in real life, the disconnect between the two wasn't as stark, if that like kind of makes sense. Like, and again, this is maybe an unfair comparison, but I was going back to like the You Got Mail, where like when she interacts with that guy in person, it's like, oh, he's awful, because he is.
Yeah.
And then the emails show like the different side. Roman was already kind of like softening up to her.
Yeah.
And so like it didn't seem as, where it kind of was like, yeah, of course, like that's a, and I don't know, again, I'm not trying to talk badly about the book, but she was even kind of confessing all along that she thought Roman was like attractive and like, ooh, I would kind of like want to be with him, but maybe not. And then there's also the person in the letters. So I don't know. There wasn't enough of the rival stage to me was very short, I guess, is what I'm long-windedly getting at. But how about for you?
It did feel short. And there seems, I don't know, their romance in general. I get why he would read the letters, why he would read them at first, even before he started to kind of like her.
Yeah.
Because he was trying to get a one up on her, because he has this familial pressure. His dad sucks. They're trying to like social climb, and they're going to do it through him. And he also has this guilt because of what happened to his little sister years ago. So that is really sad. And he is like really trying to get this promotion for the clout of it all. And so he wants that edge. And so I get that. And He seemed, I'm sorry, I got distracted. This cat just jumped on this fence. I'm sorry. It distracted me a little. I was like, whoa, what you doing? He jumped into the other yard. I could oversee over my neighbor. I'm sorry. So cats are jumping, y'all. And there's earthquakes and everything. There's a lot going on over here. So I kind of also felt, and again, this is not being super nitpicky, I kind of felt that it was like too perfect that they had this the typewriter.
I actually wanted to know more about the typewriter.
I did want to know more about like that. That right there, that was the fantasy aspect, the main fantasy aspect of the book.
And there is like an allusion was the to the fact that like, so they're called the Alouettes, right? And like, I can't, I'm going to fudge the details here, but basically it kind of seems like offhand that someone goes, oh yeah, it's one of those typewriters. So I bet you're like getting letters from somebody like unexpectedly. And it's like, oh yeah, I am. Oh yeah. Like I knew that about them. Like it was very kind of glossed over. Yes. And I wanted to know, because I think it's the grandmother figure of maybe Roman who like says this, or I was like, oh, are we going to get like a juicy backstory about like this grandma and like how her and her like badass grandma friends like all like had this like secret network of spydom that okay with writing back and forth on these. I thought we were gonna get way more about these magical typewriters, and we kind of didn't. So I was like, oh wait, what, I want to know more. And so then by the time they like get together, I just sort of was like, oh okay, we're doing this. Like I wasn't as bought into as I think a lot of readers that I saw like in other reviews and stuff, I wasn't as bought into their chemistry. Like I thought they were very great friends, and obviously friendship can blossom into like really excellent chemistry, but it kind of felt like you're annoying, you're being nice to me, but you're annoying, let's get hitched, like, and without too much more exploration of that, like oh hey, you're the person from these letters, let me, I don't know, I can see why, but also there's a piece missing.
And then I'm a virgin, but let's smash.
Oh yeah. I mean, I will say that, because, and I think this is a theme I've seen in a lot of stuff where there's like a war, like big, we're about to like not survive the night sort of situation. It was like, I want to have all the experiences with you.
Yeah, definitely.
So I was like, okay, the dialogue of it was kind of funny to me, because it was very much
that's
like
what
a,
I'm saying.
But what it, yeah, it was, I mean, Erica was made it modern, but really it was about that much of a discussion where it was like, but wait.
Yeah.
But you are not just like, no, let's get down. Like, we have one life to live. It's like, oh, okay. Yeah. I was just having a hard time buying into the chemistry, even though I do think he loved her very much, etc.
Yeah, I do think, I do totally, like, I don't know how I would act if I was, like, on the front lines of a war. So, again, I don't want to be, like, super critical. I think some of those, like, moving fast in that regard, them getting married in the backyard because it's a war. There's a war going on. In jumpsuits, no less. Hold on now. Her hair was braided and she looked beautiful. Yes, that's what Addie said.
She did.
Also, okay, I'm saying different things. I want to say something I did like. I liked the aspect of her being a journalist. I thought that was cool, like you said before. The typewriters were cute. I like that idea. Although the story about them kind of, like you said, it was like, oh, I thought there's going to be more. And also, I kind of felt like it was too perfect that he had the other typewriter and then they were working at the same place. And now they're in love and they're married. But I guess coincidences happen. Whatever. Let's let that rock. I feel like with a lot of fantasy things, fantasy stories, YA, like the main character is, they always have like strawberry blonde hair or auburn hair, or and they're so pretty, but they don't know it. They don't know it, and they're so tiny, but they don't know it. You know, but they're strong.
The face I'm making right now, I'm like, oh,
but they're still me exactly. And also, they have some kind of, they're like a chosen one, and it's like they come from humble beginnings. But there was a prophecy that was foretold long ago, and said that one such as them, who was small with red hair, would come to say. You know what I mean? It did not have that.
True.
Which I appreciated. That. I'm like, she's just a war correspondent, bro. Like, she's just trying to make it. She broke AF. Mm-hmm. You know, she lighting candles to see in the dark at night. They sleeping on pallets on the floor. You know, like, she's just trying to make it, bro. He comes from a wealthy, you know, family, but they suck. And he has tragedy in his past. They're terrible. So, and then a homegirl who doesn't blink, the one they tried to make him marry. She was like staring at him cold, like a cold fish. And they over here making atomic gas and mustard gas or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's actually segue into what I was going to say. Yeah. Like it did. Mm. Again, it does sound like the author like spent some time kind of researching like trench warfare. And so you do see, like not only bombs, but like this threat of like that gas. So there is, and like that's the whole setup in the beginning, as Erica just said, like his father I should say is trying to, or is, he has betrothed him to marry, like in this arranged marriage, this other girl, and like her family is the one making those gases. And so he's asking her like, wait, he thinks they're manufacturing bombs, so he's like, wait, is that what you're doing? And she's like, no, just you wait. And that, I mean, that's literally what she says, like, no, just you wait. And he's like, look, you don't love me, I don't love you, like why are we doing this? And she's like, we just need to make an heir. Like, that's it. Like, let, you know, and so I appreciated the like complexities that it explored, and that like, this was a very common thing. People were set up for marriages that were all about like political move and like social advancement and not necessarily love matches. And like, that is its own, you know, difficulty. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that he walks away from that to, you know, be with Iris. And going back to a little bit of what we talked about, I don't know whether this was all the way intentional, but if I'm choosing to believe it is, I do think, especially in like the time we find ourselves in right now and have, there's always some war somewhere. Our everyday lives are often both extremely affected, but also disconnected at the same time by wars that other people decide to fight that like don't necessarily have anything to do with like everyday civilians, but your life is both impacted by the repercussions of that war, and yet also, like, I know I have meditated a lot on that in the last, you know, several years, having lived through several different wars now. I used to wonder how it was, like, what were people's everyday lives like back when, like, World War One and World War Two were being fought for people who weren't fighting? Because they're, you know, and even for us, like, we don't necessarily deal with the same threat of, like, literal bombs in the way that, you know, warfare used to be fought, at least because the war hasn't come to our shores in a long time. But I kept wondering, like, what is that everyday life where, like, you still have to keep on going because capitalism, at least, you know, in our state, that, like, what is that like? And so I did appreciate, to some extent, even though I think I was missing a little bit of that world building as far as, like, the gods go, that there was, this is maybe how that goes sometimes, is that there is a war, and it is both, like, extremely affecting, and that it has, like, taken your brother from you, and obviously countless lives, and there is always that threat, and yet I still have to go to work every day, and my mom is still grieving, and like, we can't afford our bills. Like that felt real. That felt very, I don't know, mirroring of like what the experience of war is often like for people who are both on and off the front line. So there's that.
Yeah. And that was real. Like, she didn't have anything to fall back on. I don't think they explained where her dad was, if he was alive or if he just left or whatever. So up to her.
Yeah.
I don't remember anything about him.
Well, that maybe brings us to the twist, which, like, this part I will agree, I absolutely, like, perked my ears up to the point where I was like, wait, did I not pay attention to something? So I rewound it, and I was like, oh no, this is happening right now.
I think I know what you're going to say.
Yeah, so they get married, and then they're going to go back to the trench, and then, like, boom, something bad happens, right? So it's like, oh my gosh. And she kind of casually mentions, like, somebody moved our bags, and I thought I saw some footprints. And you're like, who could this be?
Yeah.
And then flash. So again, like, these creatures, I think, get, like, unleashed. And this we know. This is the thing that has been talked about. Like, if the creatures are unleashed, you got to, like, run for cover. So it's not, like, the first time we've seen them. But, okay, so everybody's running for cover. Dash, she's running with her husband, with Roman. And then all of a sudden she realizes that he's running a little too well, because he's still recovering from this awful injury from the grenade. And then she looks back and realizes that Roman is, like, running to catch up with them. And she's like, wait, if you're Roman, who's this? And boom, we learn it's her brother. Forrest is alive. He is here. He has run into, like, basically quote unquote rescue her, and we learn that it's because he has now been fighting for the opposite side, not again, I guess it sounds like it's against his will, but he is fighting for Dacre and not for Enba,
and she couldn't tell because he had a gas mask. So I'm gonna get into my thoughts on that in a second. Let's hear from our sponsor real quick. Today's episode is brought to you by Bloom Books. Charming, easygoing, and rich, Xavier Castillo has the world at his fingertips. He also has no interest in taking over his family's empire, but that hasn't stopped women from throwing themselves at him. Unless, of course, the woman in question is his publicist. The cool, the intelligent, the ambitious Sloane Kensington, who is a high-powered publicist who's used to dealing with difficult clients, but none infuriate or tempt her more than a certain billionaire heir with his stupid dimples and laid-back attitude. She may be forced to work with him, but she'll never fall for him because he's a client and that's all he'll ever be, right? Right, girl, like we all know. So just in case you didn't know, author Anna Wong is the best-selling author and book talk viral author of the Twisted Love series, the King of Sin series. Miss Wong got it going on, okay? Make sure to check out King of Sloth by Anna Wong. And thanks again to Bloom Books for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Gallery Books. So Anna Green thought she was marrying Liam West for access to subsidized family housing while at UCLA, which is an interesting reason to marry someone, but you know, in this economy. So anyway, she signed divorce papers when the graduation caps were tossed and she thought she was done. She wasn't. 3 years later, Anna is a starving artist living paycheck to paycheck while West is a Stanford professor. Now, he is part of a conglomerate. His family owns this mega grocery store chain. He's not interested in working for them, but he is interested in those greenbacks, honey, that come in the form of a $100 million inheritance. To get it, he has to be married for 5 years. That's where our girl Anna comes back into play. So the two will fake a marriage, but as he gets to know her and gets to appreciate the feisty, foul-mouthed, paint-splattered girl that she is, he'll begin to wonder if the money is worth the love of his life. Pick up The Paradise Problem by Christina Lauren to find out if it is. And thanks again to Gallery Books for sponsoring this episode. Okay, so actually, before I get to my thoughts on it, what did you think of that whole thing, that whole twist or whatever?
Again, I was kind of like, in my mind, the way I generally like this sort of thing to unfold is for there to have been a little more hinting along the way that something like this was coming. And like,
yeah,
if I take a step back, I suppose, like, Forrest is definitely a thread throughout the book. That's the name of the brother. She talks about him a lot. Yeah. Obviously, the whole, like, letter writing exercise is initially to him. The reason she goes to the front line in the first place is because she's like, I haven't heard that my brother is dead, and therefore I have to believe he's alive. And so, and she does at one point get noticed that, like, he was injured and, like, reassigned to, like, a different, I'm not going to get the wording right here, but unit or what have you.
Yeah.
So, like, it's not like we didn't get mentions of the brother, but it was very much just sort of this, like, lofty idea of, like, is he okay? Is he not? And so then when this got thrown in, and really the only hint of him actually because that's what we find out, right? Is that he's been watching her for some time.
Yeah.
Is in that sentence that is very much thrown in, I do mean pages before this big twist. Like, it's not like a thing that was dropped earlier. It is like, oh, by the way, yeah, I'm pretty sure someone was in this house. Weird. Where's my jumpsuit? Weird. Where's my second? This is on Roman's behalf. And so, and then boom, we get this reveal. So, like, I wanted be shocked by there it. I was. But, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. How'd you feel?
No, sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but there was another hint when they were like making out in the garden. She was like, I feel like someone's watching me. I just wanted to add that to the list that you were. It was like, I feel like someone's watching me. Ooh, tingle.
Yeah.
And then someone's jumpsuit is missing. Roman's, I think. Mm-hmm. Oh, and then there are these footprints in the garden and our packs are missing, our emergency packs for like when the town is ordered to evacuate because Dacre's forces are too close. Marisol had packed some stuff, some provisions. Right. And a couple of those were missing. And there were some boot prints in the garden. Mm-hmm. So then Iris covers the boot prints. And then they tell, I think her name was Keegan. And side note, Keegan has some big energy when she came in. Was that just me?
No,
I was like,
she did.
I want to see a story about Marisol and Keegan. Hold on, let me make sure am I getting her name right?
That's the wife, right?
The wife that was off to war. She came back. Keegan. Yeah. Now
Marisol's
she was given.
Wife.
Yeah, Marcel's wife. She was giving, she was like barking. Or I was like, okay, Keegan. She was like, where's my wife? I was like,
where is she?
I don't know.
Now,
Keegan,
who are you?
Like,
great. Jump in. Let's go. Like,
period. Yeah. I was like, okay. So Iris was like, oh, Keegan, I wanted the garden to look perfect for you. It, that was just a weird little silly, I don't know. That just like, that's a minor point. But I was just like, this is kind of goofy to me. I don't know. Like, she was like, oh, I brushed the footprints away so the garden would look nice for you. But there were footprints, and here they are, and someone took our pack. So it was that weird part. Yeah, that part that, like, as you were just saying a couple minutes ago, that part, it felt kind of added in later. So that it's like, I don't know, forced foreshadowing or something. So yeah, it didn't feel like,
it
so the reveal
felt like
didn't
the author
feel,
was like, okay, I decided I want to make these big reveals with, like, yeah, this twist, and now I have to, like, what this is purely conjecture on my part, but I imagine, yeah, that she was like, okay, we're gonna make this twist, which again I do think is an interesting twist, and then was like, wait, but we needed to have foreshadowed. And so, yeah, some of those little foreshadows were dropped in. Again, they were just sort of brief. That's my main thing. It's not that like any of it was necessarily illogical or like way too much of a, you know, like especially in mysteries, I hate when like the reveal is something that like is 100% completely out of left field, convenient, yeah, kind of thing. Like, that's not necessarily what I'm saying was the case here. It just sort of felt like the things that we did get revealed, whether it was, you know, the discovery that Roman is indeed the same place as Carver, like, it just when these things happen, they're quick. And I think that really will work for some readers. And then for me, it was just a little more like I wanted to spend more time being more, yeah, invested. Like, I am like mid invested in everybody in the book. I mm-hmm, had a hard time getting like super invested because the stories felt like they were moving at like kind of a fast clip. So not a bad book in any way. Like, I really enjoyed the story, and I skipped ahead while you were talking and looked to see what like the sequel was about. And I don't know that some of my quips are like necessarily going to be like answer or quibbles, but I, yeah, do see an interesting setup for the conflict between them as like as far as the romance goes, because at the end of this book we find out that at the first one that Roman, who's been trying to catch up to Iris and her brother, and her brother's like, we can't afford to slow down, like we have to go, and like I'll explain why later, but like we'll go back and look for him. If we don't find him, I'm sorry, like that's that, like it's not safe. And so the book kind of closes with him crawling through like the dust, and then Dacre, the like bad god, is like, who that little human be? We should heal him. And so that's like how the book closes. And I just found out, you know, again, we talked about spoilers, but it sounds like the setup of the next book is that he awakes in Dacre's like territory and has no, mm-hmm, recollection of anything. He's got amnesia. So then he starts getting these letters from this. I don't know how the heck he got the typewriter back. But
don't start. Are you serious?
That's all I know. I don't know like the details. Maybe I'm there's a logical explanation.
I'm looking at the Goodreads for the next book. It's Ruthless Vows. And I do see it says he strikes up a correspondence with his mysterious pen pal.
So
wardrobe
like
door.
Special delivery. Or maybe it's just, yeah, maybe the, I don't know. But that is the, so again, there's like so many interesting layers here. But yeah, yeah. They, in theory, both of them lost their typewriters because, you,
yeah,
know, bombs.
They
and
leave.
Yeah, evacuations. So I don't know. Maybe the connection, like she said, is about more than the typewriters.
It's, yeah, that could be explored. Like yeah, some of the things here are explored very interestingly, like war, like grief. And I did like the parts in the beginning where they were like, I don't know, it was like an alternate World War One, and she's, yeah, like you said, a plucky journalist just trying to, you know, report on her beat, you know. Yes. That I like that part. I am wondering how this is going to come together. Also, well, let me complain about one more thing. them there beasties.
Yes.
What was flying through the air that they had to duck and cover, mm-hmm, from? At the end, she was like, oh, they stank real bad. Like, they smelled like rotted death and, you know, demise and all that extra stuff. I'm like, I kind of thought it was just silly. It was like, you got these hell beasts, essentially, flying, mm-hmm, through the air. And they're dropping, like, it's like a little drop in a bucket. Like, that's the noise I heard. Because she was like, it looked, they thought it was a bomb. Mm-hmm. And it dropped into a soldier's lap. It did not detonate. Instead, some gas came out. And I'm like, so they, mm-hmm, just dropping bombs? I would think they would be tearing people limb from limb. But what do I know? Because they're like, they're hell beasts,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Ethrals or something.
More like the monkeys from Wizard of Oz. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But again, too, that's a, you know, maybe that's a subversion on the trope. So, you sure. know, I think, too, like you were saying in the very beginning of this, maybe my expectations colored this in a way that made it yeah. like not the right read for me at the moment, but it wasn't totally unenjoyable. I think my expectations were just different. Also, this is a question I wanted to ask you.
Please do.
So in the last full episode we did where we discussed 10 things I hate about you. If you didn't listen to that, you should after you watch the movie, because it's a fun time. So in that episode, you mentioned how your expectations for high school were made unrealistic by movies like 10 Things I Hate About You. So I wanted to ask you, with this book in mind, like, and other YA romances or YA books with romances you read, like when you were actually like the target age, target yeah. audience, how did those books prepare you, or how did those books color your, how you viewed romance? And how would you compare that to your actual experiences with romance and dating? Obviously, you don't have to give me any details for...
I'm all, well, there's one guy, and I'm going to spell his name for you. No,
one guy. His social yeah, is.
yeah. They sent me to therapy, I think is the right answer. no, so...
Yo.
The main thing that I... And I'm not saying I don't enjoy reading about things that... like I don't agree should happen in real life. Like that's not it. Half the stuff I don't, yeah. you know, I don't like murder, but I read a lot of mystery. So like, let's take that right. out of the way. But
right.
a lot of, especially, and it's funny because I really do enjoy like a rivals to lovers mm-hmm. thing, but so much of like the YA that I remember really hitting me was between like a character where like the boy was ultimately a real jerk and like pretending not to like you reasons. Mm. And then suddenly he does. And so I for sure know that I hung around too long in like stupid relationships when I was young under That's the fact real. That like, oh, but he's going to change. And like, there's going to be that third act. You know, I didn't have the language to say any of this so much as just sort of understanding implicitly, like just because he's a jerk now doesn't mean he's going to be a jerk later. He's going to fall for it. We're going to like have this moment. And like probably sticking around too long in like teen relationships where like the person was absolutely just not right for me and like kind of a jerk, but like thinking that is something that was going to change, right? That like, oh, there's going to be this moment where like we both realize like we're each other's like one true love and it's going to be great. And instead it was just a pattern of like really crappy behavior. So and I could see, I don't know that like this book actually does that, because I would argue that he's never all that terrible to her. He's just sort of snide. And obviously comes from like yeah, a wealthy family, but like she doesn't know, right? That yeah. like he has this like really complicated past because his little sister passed away because he looked away for 1 second and she drowned. Like he doesn't know that his father is like, or she doesn't know his, she doesn't know about him. So it's not that he's really all that terrible. He's just sort of snarky and like really confident, but she admits like yeah, she like, loves bad. His writing. And the reason yeah. she doesn't read it is because she likes it so much. And she's like, oh, I don't want to like you. Because you're like kind of insufferable, but he's never like a full blown yeah. jerk. So I don't think yeah. that this book is an example of that per se. But that is definitely a setup.
That's real. And you're reminding me, I think that's a thing with, I don't know, the patriarchy. Like yeah. I read something about how, now maybe this was just conjecture, someone's theory, but it made sense. Like say the story of Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
I read how that, yes, same. I read how that was a thing. Like that was a story told to girls to prepare them for the gruffness of their, how potentially rough and gruff their husbands could be once they got married. And to kind of like, to show them that like, oh, you know, it'll be kind of bad at first but and
there's
terrible.
There's romanticism to it.
But there's a, yeah, and you're a princess. So you got a library and singing candles and he's going to turn into a man eventually. And like that day never comes. So it's like, I've heard that is a thing in, you know, it's interesting. I think it's indicative of, you know, married life for some people.
And so I think that's I wasn't expecting you to say that. I'm glad I asked you that. That's a really interesting, that's some really interesting insight. For me, directing that question towards myself, I would say that the kind of YA romance I gravitated towards, I liked, I think I liked it when the girl was kind of like, cause you know, I feel like at that point you're kind of putting yourself into the story, which is sounds like what you were doing. I feel like I liked it when the girl was kind of cold and the guy had to like work for it a little bit.
10 things I hate about you.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And probably would look as silly as that movie because, you know, we're young and goofy. But what I would say, how it compared to my real life, like what I read in romance, like YA romance books or romantic books, it's like, it's one thing I saw in this, like the moaning and the breathlessness after they kiss. I'm like, girl, who's sick?
What are you doing?
You know, they're like, oh, his hot body pressed against. I know we just all trying to, you know, we're trying to describe things and stuff. But sometimes some stuff in the book, I was like,
here is where I will tell you that I think this is also just down to a difference in the way we all perceive attraction, because
that's
know, like, coming, you know, without getting too much into like personal life stuff, but I definitely I recently had a discussion with a friend about pretty much this exact topic. Like,
oh my God.
People described it like the minute they kiss somebody, this, or like you see someone from across the room and this, and that person looked at me like I had three heads. And it was like, no, people really do. Like, I experienced that. I was like, oh, pero I don't. Interesting. So I could say maybe that is more about Vanessa and Erica than it is about Iris and Roman.
That is fully, and I will take that, and I'll be like, you know what? That's just me. You know, don't mind me. I've never felt that.
Enjoy heard those my friends kisses.
Those breathless kisses followed by a moan that escapes your body. I think I quoted something. I was like, now, girl, if you don't go, I had to put the book down and take it, like, go for a lap around my apartment. I'm just like, gosh darn it. Also, shout out to the man who was trying to evacuate with his three goats. That just tickled me.
Yes.
He was like, she was like, there was a man with three goats on a leash and a bag of vegetables. I said, you better go ahead.
Go.
With your cabbages.
He's like, if I'm going to a new life, I'm bringing my goats and my cabbages with
bring
me. Like,
my
and that
goats,
is that.
Bro.
Do it. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I appreciated him. That just tickled me for some reason. But yes, yeah, so overall, what are your closing thoughts?
Overall, again, I really do like books that explore, especially something that explores World War One, because the crux, like the overwhelming amount of like reimaginings of a war are definitely focused on World War Two. So I did like that it was kind of like an alternative England. I liked the character being somebody who very much like could stand up for herself. She wasn't like a damsel in distress type. Not that there's necessarily anything wrong with that, but I appreciated like everything she brought to the table as being very smart and capable. I did like that he wasn't like a giant jerk. And I do think that there's plenty to enjoy, potentially, if you just remove. Again, I think a lot of my maybe critiques of the book came from a place of just wanting to jam this book into a box that it never really needed to be in. Like, if I just didn't come at it expecting more mythology and more high fantasy and just take it for what it is. Again, the only like real, like if I had to nail one thing down, it's mainly just that the pacing of it like was a little quick for me to like really feel connected. But like the story itself is not like flawed in any way that I like take major issue with. So I do think this is going to be a really great book for a lot of people. It was a fun time. It was great. I was just like, oh my gosh, like y'all fall in love fast. It was my takeaway. How about you?
What did you say earlier? Pedo, not me.
Yeah.
That might be my motto. I can't do it because I don't have the accent. It's going to sound goofy. But it needs a little saison, a little adobo on it. It don't sound right, doesn't it? So it needs something. So overall, I agree. I think it had some really great moments. I feel like, because I'm also like a mood reader, I guess. Who is? I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I need to really be. And since I didn't do too much research on it. I was just like, well, we about to read it. We decided this was a book club read. Let's read it. Let's go. And I had these other preconceived notions in my head. And so that kind of colored my experience, much like you said it did yours. I think there's a lot to enjoy here, though. And like you said, like some people are very like hopeless romantic and they're going to like that insta love. And he bought me a 5-cent malt.
at the drugstore, and now we hitched. You know, some people will like that, and that's cool. And I think I'm kind of curious to see how they tie it up together,
Me too.
With what happened with her brother and stuff, and how they get Roman back. So, yes, I think if you like very light fantasy, a story of a girl trying to make it, going off to war, the man who loves her, following her into it, I think you like it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Successful book club, I do think.
I think so. Should I read the funny bad review from Goodreads, or no? Should we not be?
No, we can do this.
Should we? Okay. So I was looking around on Goodreads, just to see, you know, other things, because I didn't want to forget details and stuff, just to remind myself, right? And I saw a kind of funny 1-star review on Goodreads. You know, those never disappoint. So this girl said, she writes letters like I did when I was heartbroken at 13 over my Minecraft boyfriend.
And I want to point out that this is not because we think this book deserves a 1-star review. We were just really tickled by the phrasing of that review.
That it was just, I included a screenshot.
So
like, she was not. Yeah, I did not rate this book 1-star.
No.
I'm just like, this girl, that is a really funny review. I had to share. So I had to share it.
Great.
Well, thank you for
having me on. This was fun.
Of course. It was very fun. Thanks for being on. And thanks, everyone, for listening. Please leave feedback about the show on Apple Podcasts to let us know how we're doing and to help others find us. You can email us at heyya@bookriot.com. Don't forget to visit bookriot.com for newsletters, more podcasts, and all things bookish. Thanks again to today's sponsors for helping make the show possible. And thanks to our awesome audio editor, Caitlin Brame. You can follow me, Erica, on Twitter at Erica_EZE_. Vanessa, where are you at?
I am mostly on Twitter and Instagram, and both the same handle, which is Buenos Dias SD, which is BUENOSDIAZSD.
Yes. All right. So it was fun. It was real. We will talk to y'all again in 2 weeks. Until then, happy reading.